Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Hi Bob, the officially unofficial For All Mankind podcast on Apple TV Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about season 3, episode 4, Happy Valley. That's how it's colloquially known to Danielle. I don't know how to pronounce the actual real name of this location on Mars, but Happy Valley works for me. Aaron, are you living in Happy Valley when it comes to this episode?
Melis Chasma. This is the quintessential episode of For All Mankind for me.
Right.
Everything comes together. Yeah. The plotting, the timelines, the space, like just when you think you've got a sense of equilibrium, there's a new twist and development, and it's not even the twist and development of the actual episode. I loved it. And to the extent that I had like some reservations of the first space disaster where I felt like I had to, there was definitely debatable things, but I think they were just that debatable. Like that's what happens when humans make decisions and do things and try to succeed even when they're failing. I love this episode. I thought it was fucking awesome. What did you think?
No, I love Ron Moore, and I know Ron Moore's not the only writer on this thing, but his style of storytelling, right? He's always got these moments of high drama where things go wrong, and you can almost see it. You can almost see like the stepping stones from this, you know, very like buttoned up, held together situation into the chaos that's going to be the end of this episode. And I love seeing that. As soon as they pan to the Russian ship and you think, oh boy, they're not happy about losing this race, huh? What are they going to do? Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to go off the rails, and it's super fun to watch. And I feel like everybody here, I almost like stand up and cheer when Ed makes the decision to go after the Russians and help them to save their ship. Cause I'm like, he's making the right call. This is the right thing to do. And he's giving up his shot. You know, he doesn't even like, there isn't a jockeying here, right? When Ed's trying to determine what they should do to go after the Russians, he's just like, well, we're the better equipped ship. I'm going to go do it. There's no like this is me missing my mission to Mars. I'm not going to be the first guy there. I could if Danielle steps up.
Yeah.
But he just steps into that role and it's so perfect.
What's great is they give 5 seconds of just Joel Kinnaman's face processing. Yeah. You can see him process every one of those angles and then be like, okay, this is the right, after all that, this is the right thing to do. And, you know, the fact that like, just everybody, I think, acted in the exact appropriate way, with the possible exception of serial killer fucking Danny and his whole shit. I don't know. But
And Dev, like, I saw the cracks, right? Like, you know, this is too good to be true. This guy can't actually be as altruistic and good as he says he is. And this is the episode that proves it. And I was happy to see that finally, that veil pulled back.
I felt like there's a little bit of that's the only complaint I have in this whole episode. I felt like there's a little compression on the heel to face turn because I thought I thought the way that his employees reacted to them losing the space race, like, well, it's physics, what are you going to do? Fuck you. If you're at NASA, Margo would be saying the same shit. How do we win? I was kind of frustrated that they're like, oh, there's nothing we can fucking do. They got the solar shield, blah, blah, blah. And then him picking up the monitor and throwing it, I felt like that I would have rather seen the Helios team pull together and try to suggest solutions and work the problem, him growing frustration over an episode or two than what happened. But yeah, like, you know, I'm reminded of a quote we heard from the season premiere of Westworld. It's not a spoiler, it's unconnected, but no one with that much money has not sinned in acquiring it. True. The idea that this guy amassed this fortune And didn't ever step on anyone or screw anyone over or fuck any, like, seems very preposterous. And you can kind of see, like, you saw in the first episode, the way he kind of manipulated the conversation. And here you saw it really, like, who he calls on, when he calls the debate to end, when, like, it's very much like what, you know, and he says it's the group and we're speaking in unity, but it's all a bunch of bullshit. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I thought it was interesting. I just think it was a little fast for me, just a little.
I get you. I mean, there is a point when you're talking about space travel where mathematics does dictate outcome, you know, and you can look at an equation and say this is an impossibility. We cannot beat them. So what's the point? But you're right. I mean, like, look, Apollo 13 didn't just say, well, they mathematically don't have enough oxygen to get back on
right.
these three people being in this cabin, so let's just give up, right? They came up with interesting solutions to fudge the math. And I think, yeah, that might be what's missing here in that scene. I thought his anger was appropriate. Like, I could see someone who is a good person smashing a monitor because they're angry that...
They're out of frustration, yeah.
Yeah, their vision is not working out how they expected it. That doesn't make him evil. But the thing that, you know, pulls back that veil, like I said, is... him not going to help people who are in need when they're a million miles away from home, you know?
Yeah.
That's the thing. And knowing that he's the best equipped to do it and refusing to do that. And it's almost an extra layer of like, oh, shut up with your bullshit, man. When he puts that on the group, you know, the group is a two-sided thing right here. He can point to the group and say, well, we're all making decisions together, and that's, you know, communally, that's very good and equal. But then you can also point to the group and use them as a scapegoat. And I think that's kind of what he's doing here, right? Like, well, my hands are tied. The group says we're not going after this guy. And there's no group that you can prosecute and say, well, you're an evil being, group. Like, it's not an individual you can point to and say this person is bad. It's just a group of people doing what they... individually think they should do. I don't know.
No, he's very skillful at how he manipulates the chorus to his of consensus, because he knows it seems like, and I also wish I'd seen another iteration or two of this process, but to me, he knows there's certain people that play a sour note and certain people that can be reliably the play a positive note, and the order and the sequence and like, again, like when the song is over, because there was still argument left when he kind of said, the group's got it. Like, that's, you know.
And ultimately, as the leader of that group, he's the visionary. He's the person who's giving them their ideals in a lot of cases. And right. So is it any surprise also when they vote in the way that he expects or that he would choose, you know?
And also when you got a leader. People. Yeah. When you got a leader that's like destroying equipment, when he gets a fit of anger, it also that manipulates a group to like. Try to find like that taps into like, well, I don't want to make daddy or mommy angry energy. So like, what can I do to say to make them happy? Like, it's there's a lot of
and when they a go lot of
coercion
somebody,
in this uncoercive
who's in the meeting where they go, well, we're gonna fire this person for not agreeing with the group,
right?
You know, is that a group decision or is that a Dan as a decision?
And we've also, that's also, it's like, it hasn't always been a group decision. Like, Ed says, fuck, I got to be able to steer this ship unilaterally. Boom, we're making this change. But, you know, retrospectively, it makes it seem like, well, did Dev give in that easily because he was just like, oh, well, this is the commander we picked and the commander wants it and blah, blah, blah. Or did he just know that this was bullshit that can be changed with a simple, unoverridable software update? And so it's like, yeah, he's magnanimous in defeat only because all of his defeats are hidden victories.
Right. And this should maybe give you a little bit of pause when you think about automated vehicles too, right?
Yeah, like, and who's developing them.
Controlling the vehicle that you're in when you could press a button and it can drive for you. Who's controlling who here?
And again, like, I just don't know why people will like distrust a politician, but then unironically fully trust a billionaire.
Right.
Because I assume there's probably just by the laws of probability, there's got to be a handful out there that have somehow amassed the wealth of a pharaoh through no wrongdoing of their own. But like, I think those people are the exceptions, and they might have even if you believe in their overall positive vision of humanity, of like, you know, saving them through alternate energy, the way they get there might be pretty fucked up, you know? Mm-hmm. So I thought this was a little, it definitely tells us what like Ron Moore thinks, because the other thing is like, it's not like NASA comes off looking great. Sure. Because I feel like Margot would have done something fucking crazy that would have destabilized a whole country if she had been allowed to do it. And that's not a great, like, and Ellen had the right approach. The one that she's saying is outside. Margot, talking about face heel turns. Yeah. Like I was rooting for her so hard in the first two seasons and she is becoming a villain.
Yeah. She did give engine technology to the Russians. She has been like a double agent here within NASA.
I don't even think that's her villainy. That's a good person forced into a bad situation. But like this acquisition of power for the sake of it and just wanting to solve everything with government power and fiat, the one dude calls her running an oligarchy. It's not far off. A self-funded, unaccountable arm of the government. I think that's the Ron Moore's not saying that, like, oh, private spaceflight, bad. It's kind of like,
no.
There are different sides of the same coin that have different trade-offs, different balances, and we should probably have a healthy mix of both.
And I like the counter arguments to, you know, the progress that we see here, right?
Yeah.
I think there are trade-offs when you're talking about technological progress. It does maroon people in jobs that no longer exist. And if you don't have support systems for those people to be trained up into the new positions you're creating in whatever, you know, new type of energy you're producing or whatever industry it is, those people are going to get left behind and they're going to be angry about it. And their families are going to be angry about it. And it's going to be a problem. Yeah. You can't just make change without thinking about the consequences of it. Change is positive.
That's my biggest criticism of a lot of the political decisions that even my own side makes, is that like you can do something that's like good, but it's also disruptive, and you have to have a plan for the people that are disrupted, you know, and you can't just like give someone $1,500 retraining vouchers and be like, well, your town's dead and your only source of income's gone. Go code.
Right.
You know, here's a how to write visual 65? Basic. Uh-huh. Yeah. Start integrating spreadsheets, old man. Like that's just not like, you got to have a generous, you got to have that. You have to have generous retirement efforts for people just like, there's no fucking way I can change at this point. You got to be able to have generous training and relocation offers for the people that can. You got to invest in these communities. You have to have that plan ready to go with the other thing that you're doing to disrupt people. And almost no one does. And no wonder people get pissed off and distrustful. But it's also there's a clever, I don't know how much I agree with it, but there's a clever inversion where the Republicans are the clean energy progressive people and the Democrats are now the ones who are marshaling disinformation and cynically playing on people's self-interest and fear. And they build a Fox News network called Eagle News Network that I think is just essentially a left-wing version of Fox. Sure. And I'm going to be interested to see how this plays out.
It has a lot of potential to get heavy-handed there.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty funny that you got the Republican House Minority Leader being like, oh, now you guys care about oil and because like your constituents are riled up about it. Yeah, it's some hee hee ha ha's, but we'll see how it goes.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, overall, great episode. I'm really hot to see the next one. I want to see how all this plays out. And I assume it's just going to be one thing after another to the end of the season, right? I mean, that's how these seasons kind of go.
Yeah. So. Yeah, because the shape of the next three episodes is immediately clear at the end of this. Yeah. Like you think anyway, like what's going to have to happen now. And
it'll be interesting to see how much political will there is to make things happen for the space program after a disaster like this. And, you know, I mean, every season has had its own set of disasters, but
yeah.
The public always seems to rebound on that, but now we've got a different mix of political stew here. It's there's a little bit of, you know, blame going on to the space program for taking away jobs and causing strife on Earth.
They're vulnerable in a public opinion kind of way for the first time, probably since the 50s.
Right.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the Shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
So, see how that goes. Let's get into the recap. We start off with the Phoenix on the way to Mars, and it's in the lead. Gonna land first, apparently. Sojourner 1 is behind that, and then Mars 94 behind that, which is, you know, the Russian ship. Helios is guaranteed to reach Mars first, all but guaranteed, let's say. And NASA is apparently going to reach Mars last. Danielle calls up Ed to congratulate him on their win. But NASA has a trick up their sleeve. It's called Operation Jolly Roger, which are their solar sails. They're going to actually carry them to Mars 8 days before the Phoenix. And nobody knew that Mars had this, or that Mars had this, that NASA had this. This is a scene we were talking about where Dev Iessa tries to come up with a way to offset their acceleration, but his engineers are telling him it's impossible. And he smashes that monitor.
I fucking love the whole deploying of the solar sails, the way they were like talking like pirates.
Dude, the whole pirate theme is great here.
The yo-ho-ho, a pirate's life for me, sea shanty. The fact that, like, you know, Ed was being, I think, gracious in victory, but and Danielle was unusually conciliatory, but it was knowing that they had this giant knife behind their backs that they're about to plunge into the Russians and NASA, or no, not and the private space flight. Mm-hmm. It's funny because before the sail, I maybe it was obvious what was going to happen, but before they started deploying the actual solar sail, I was like, is NASA going to commandeer Helios? Like, are they just going to, is this going to be like just space pirate? They're just going to privateer this thing?
Send some tethers over and border.
But when the solar sails popped out, so I assume that a lot of people watching the show know the whole deal about solar sails, but there's this phenomenon called the solar wind. That's not wind at all. It's the energy, the particles, charged particles are flowing off the sun and would exterminate all the life on Earth if we didn't have the magnetosphere that shields us from it.
Yeah.
But over vast distances, a large lightweight material that can grab those particles can take advantage of it, just like a sail can catch wind. And it's a tiny amount of thrust, but the crucial thing is it never stops. Mm-hmm. It's a gentle wind that always blows in one direction, and it will constantly accelerate you much faster than you can achieve with velocities with rockets, because they eventually run out of fuel. The sun is 5 billion years away from running out of solar wind. So it was cool.
And I started to do like scrutinize the math on this. Like, how far out are they? Are solar sails going to pick up enough solar radiation to actually push them? And I gave up. I was like, okay, the show is telling me yes. So just go.
240 million miles. That's a lot of miles build up speed. And, you know, like also these ships, these huge ships, patently don't have the propellant to like burn, you know, like they have to burn as fast as they can, and then they have to save the burn to stop at the end. So like,
that's
kind
of crucial. Yeah.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised by how big of an advantage, because NASA went from last place. At least they said that, like, even though Mars was slightly behind them, or the Mars 94, that it was, you know, going to catch them. They went from dead last to 8 days early. Pretty incredible.
So that was the thing that, like, really, I was surprised they didn't make a bigger deal about it. I know the radiation killing you in 3 days is like a big problem.
Sure.
But they didn't even mention that the Russians, like, after they fired their engines to try and catch up, their trajectory was off and they were just going to shoot past Mars with dead engines. They can't slow down. It was like,
right.
They totally ignore that fact. I'm like, that's the scarier thing to me is like,
but that'll take them 3 months.
Yeah, but like, let's say you jettison, you know, your radioactive your ship or something.
If you scram the reactor,
you're still fucking dead. And it's almost a worse fate just drifting off into space.
Was an all your marbles situation where the Russians knew that they would lose, and I don't know what they're flirting with. Like, maybe the Russians are having a collapse of their empire brought on by the space race instead of a bunch of complicated and like that this is Russia's, like, man, this is our Hail Mary, and if we don't succeed here, we're just going to be irrelevant. The emperor will have no clothes. Conversely, if we're the first there, but man, it did seem like they put those cosmonauts in a terrible fucking position.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And engines that they don't even really fully understand, maybe, because that's the other.
Yeah.
You know, this is stolen through Margo information.
I found it almost funny when Dev is like, we've beaten the world superpowers at their own game. And I'm like, well, that's one of their games. The world superpowers play many, many, many games. And OK, you're very good at chess, but how are you at Pinochle, or how are you in any of the other games that the world superpowers play? Congratulations, it's the only game you play and you beat them at it.
Well, and everyone also talks about like the advantage of private funding and out of the box thinking and whatever R&D has versus public versus private. And I thought this episode's a good refutation, because like, say what you will about NASA, yeah, there's something about having the full faith and credit of the United States behind your pocketbooks, because they get shit done. And they, like, I think that, you know, I got really excited about the SpaceX stuff and Armadillo Aerospace. Like, I've been following this stuff for 20 years. Their progress has been glacial compared to what NASA did in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And they had the head start of NASA doing all the shit in the 50s and 60s and 70s.
Right.
So, like, these, like, oh, you got your badass fusion engines and your state-of-the-art methane. While you were fucking around perfecting our technology, boom, we invented the solar sail.
Yeah, and that's right.
Because who knows if it'll make money? It's like, I thought it was, that's great. It's great.
Yep. All right, the news about the solar sails goes out on the news channels with political commentators pointing fingers left and right. Ellen gets bad news from a former supporter who is no longer willing to support her, and he wants to tap into NASA's funds, and he's playing hardball here. And Ellen's feeling the pressure, so her fake husband suggests they go back to NASA. I always forget this guy's name. Do you remember his name?
No. Okay. Alan's husband.
Does it matter?
It's Alan's husband. Right. Alan's beard.
Yeah. So he suggests that they go back to NASA to congratulate them on winning the race to Mars. It'll feel good. It'll feel like going home. Like you mentioned, this Eagle News channel is obviously supposed to be a liberal version of Fox. I found this scene hard to watch because it feels very accurate. Mm. Feels too accurate in a way that disturbs me, you know?
What's the part of the people with the rally against clean energy?
The whole damn thing, top to bottom. The news.
No, yeah. You know,
the commentator being the way he is, this interaction with, I don't know if they're senators or the Congress people here. I feel like that is super accurate and it's very frustrating. All that stuff just made me feel gross.
And I do think that, like, on average, your average liberal or leftist or progressive is no more immune to misinformation than anyone else. It's just that the way the die have been cast on the board, you're not as maybe exposed to it as much. But I don't know.
Exposed to the misinformation you would tend to agree with as much. Yeah.
It's wild because I drove up through northern Ohio this weekend. I was going to Lake Erie. And there is a lot of, you know, northern Ohio is very flat and a windy place. And there's some communities that have taken advantage of that fact and installed these big, beautiful, glistening white windmills. Now, I always think they're beautiful and majestic when I'm driving past counties like that. And I got a little bit further north and there was just all these yard signs. These bright yellow yard signs, no to windmills, no to windmills, no to windmills, no, like you never saw anyone supporting windmills. And I'm like, I'm morally certain that under these same fucking farm fields, if a lake of petroleum were discovered tomorrow, the landscape would be littered with oil derricks the next year, pumped, gleefully extracting that natural resource. I don't understand why, when I hear the arguments against it, it's like, oh, they make a little bit of noise, or oh, they might strike bird, which is something that they've worked on, or they're just ugly. I'm like, I've been to fucking Texas, where every goddamn field's got an oil derrick pumping all the goddamn time. Blights on the landscape does not stop people from extracting natural energy. It boggles my mind that you could get free energy for your people in these rural communities, and they're not doing it. But then you see this episode and it's like, of course they would, because that's what's they're getting people whipped up and they're not properly explaining it. They're not giving people off ramps like all these coal and oil people. And, you know,
it's much easier to scare people than it is to explain to them the benefits of this technology. And, you know, it is a pain point because it is going to mean a change in the type of industry there. Right. Like if you were extracting coal, suddenly now you're extracting wind, it's a different skill set. These people aren't trained for it, you know. I get it. There is a pain point there.
I understand.
What do they do about that?
Right. Yeah. It's like
that's the problem to be solved. Not we shouldn't hold back that type of progress simply because it's hard.
I feel like if this attitude was around in the turn of this 20th century, we'd still be driving horses downtown.
Oh, it was.
And we'd be dealing with mountains of horse shit, you know.
Right. That was the thing. Yeah, you've got a bunch of horse stable workers who are now, what, I'm supposed to be an auto mechanic? I don't know how to do any of that shit.
Supposed to pump gas? I don't know how to pump. Yeah, yeah.
You got to take care of those people, though, too.
It's sad and to be lamented. We'll see if Ronald D. Moore has some ideas on how we can bridge these gaps.
I certainly feel like he's accurately described the problem.
Yes.
So that's a good start for sure. Then we get Kelly DJing on the first interstellar pirate radio station. She's got some truly excellent jams she's playing here from the 90s.
It's fucking cute, man. Her, you know, kicking off, can I kick it from Tribe Called Quest, her giving the weather report across the solar system. It's awesome. I love it. I wish I was floating out there with them to hear the pirate radio station because it seems legit.
And she's doing this all from her iPod, which you recall was definitely not around in 1994, so there's been some acceleration on that technology.
Oh yeah.
I'm pretty sure that was a late 90s invention, right? The iPod.
I have no idea when the iPod, because I was a late adopter to all that shit, man. I think I was one of the last people that got a smartphone. I had a Zune and a Sansa Express. I refused to get into an iPod.
Oh, yeah.
So that's one of those weird people.
2001.
Wow. Wow, yeah, wow, wow. So
10 years early here. Then Ed takes a job. I don't know. And some dude gets a Caesar salad from hydroponics. It's kind of a tour of the Phoenix and how good, or sorry, not a job, a jog. It's kind of a tour of the Phoenix and how good life is over there, right? They've got gravity, which is in juxtaposition to the people who are floating around in the NASA ship. They've got salads on their own hydroponic stations that are already set up and running. NASA doesn't have anything like that. It's hopefully processing waiting for them on Mars.
Pissed the water to Caesar salad. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's also, not for nothing, another loving 2001 tribute. An astronaut, jogging on the outside of this thing. Sure.
Totally. That's got to be nice to have that gravity on your trip. Because, man, that much time in zero G, that seems hard.
Yeah.
We're not built for it.
No. Especially if they're getting one full Earth G. That's a huge boon.
Oh, yeah.
I did some research, and an MSAM, I think, stands for Martian Surface Access Module. Because there's been other, like, LSAMs and, for lunar surface. So, I think that's what they're going for. When they showed Danny in the little thing, I started thinking, what the fuck could that be used for? We know they have mobile HABs that can fly over Mars looking for water and whatnot. Is this literally just to transport people to and from? Because it doesn't look like it has any room for cargo. Is it just like a lifeboat? Yeah. Like if something goes wrong, we can get everybody. Yeah.
Seems like it.
I know they can make their own fuel, but this the volume of this thing is just teeny. It's like a flying elevator car,
Yeah. It's like a small, it's like half the size of a shuttle on the Enterprise or something, right?
Right, yeah.
So the news is covering the space race, and we are kind of treated to some more introductions to the crew. Roland, specifically, who is the former Soviet astronaut who defected in last year, I think. He's on the mission, which I think is a bold choice by NASA. It's like, are you sure that was a true defection? Is this a ploy by the Russians, a long con to get somebody onto one of your teams?
It's certainly a provocation. And I feel like that's carrying on the Reagan tradition of kind of taking it to the Russians, openly challenging them on the world stage.
When you capture one of the enemy's pieces and use it against them, that's a pretty powerful thing.
But, oh boy, is it going to land this guy into some sticky situations by the end of this episode? Yeah. What do you make of the fixation of the North Koreans still?
I don't know, because they also say, they're kind of stalled on the platform, right? Like, they're not doing much, so why even bother? Maybe set up for next season somehow?
Are they going to set up to try to take over the moon while the U.S. and Russia's eyes are on on Mars? Because it made sense in the beginning because their probe launch blew up and caused the Phoenix disaster. But they're just keeping on mentioning in the background about they're still having to give up the space race and it's struggling and they're defensive and all this. I wonder if it's going to cause some kind of, or maybe it's not even about the moon, it's a geopolitical situation that causes America and probably Russia to take their eye off some things. I don't know, just noticing it, paying attention. Well,
what do you think of the chances that this is simply sort of reactionary storytelling? Like, hey, we know that we mentioned this early on and it was kind of a plot point, so we need to keep people updated with what's going on with North Korea's space program.
I feel like it's not super likely.
Yeah.
Because that's the key. It'd be weird if they keep mentioning it, because I don't think anyone in episode 4 would be like, I wonder what North Korea's fucking doing. We haven't heard from them for a while because we knew what they're doing. They're fucking up with their space program and making a mess. I feel like it's going to pay off.
Probably. It's just, I guess, a question of this season or next.
Right.
So Danielle's chatting with someone. I don't know her name. She's part of the Sojourner crew, about how excited she is to land on Mars. Is the orange stuff they deliver to her Tang?
I don't think they mention it, but that's what I called up my notes. Yeah, Tang. Okay. There's a Tang pirate, some Tang piracy within the crew. I don't know what that what the pirate's code says about that kind of business.
Because Tang is one of those drinks that was originally invented for NASA, right? In order to have something for their astronauts to get electrolytes and all that stuff.
Sure, to keep them drinking. Because that's a challenge when you just are forced to drink water. Most people don't drink enough because water at room temperature, we've invented better drinks. You throw some orange flavor in there, people drink more of it. Same thing with Gatorade.
I don't like room temperature water, but I pretty much just drink coffee and water. I don't see what the problem is.
But if you just had tap water, recycled urine, that is body temperature that you're drinking, instead you'd want some fucking flavor in that. I bet. I'm not saying you wouldn't drink it. But I'm just saying statistically, we have studies showing that you put flavor in water, people drink more of it. So if you want your astronauts pissing clear, give them Tang.
And look, they've got enough things to discipline themselves to have to do while they're in space. Forcing themselves to drink lukewarm tap water is probably not one you want.
You had some questions about this Melis Chasma. Mm-hmm. This, you know what the Mariner Valley is, right? The Valles Marineris. That's named after the Mariner probe, Mariner 9, that discovered it. But this is the Melis Chasma is the widest part of the Valles Marineris system.
Oh.
Which is already a canyon four times the size of the Grand Canyon.
Wow.
And it's thought to be cutting through an old lake bed, dried up Martian lake bed. And recently, within the last 3 years, with the advanced probes that can detect subsurface details, they found what they think is a huge reserve of liquid or ice water that's less than a meter below the surface of this valley. So, also, Expanse fans, this is like the first human settlement. Mariner Valley is the first human settlement on Mars, and it's where they get a lot of their Texas draw culture. I thought that was cool because I was like, Matt, why would they land there? But then, it's Mariner Valley. That makes a lot more sense.
Totally
on track for the Expanse. We're going to be early, it turns out, with the space race going, all these ripple effects.
So the crew of the Phoenix is kind of just hanging out in their mess hall or whatever, acting out sci-fi movie scenes, including one that Gordo was in from this Love in the Sky or whatever. Danny walks in at just that moment and is pissed off. He takes the guy out in the hall, forces him to repeat the lines very menacingly from the movie until Ed shows up, puts an end to it, and he tells Danny, look, you got to learn to control your temper, man. Part of being an astronaut is controlling your shit. His temper is going to be his real challenge, right? This season, he's going to have to get over that.
Yeah, this whole Jason Bateman thing he's got going on. This NASA psycho is. Yeah, I don't like Danny. I don't like his character. Don't like his arc. Don't like his shit he does with Karen. I don't. Hopefully, one of these fucking rogue cables.
Yeah,
the menace of deep space, a rogue cable will take this fucker out because, oh, my God. I guess it's interesting from a conflict standpoint. But I felt this Nick guy, did you recognize him? That he's like bullying here?
Very vaguely. He looks is familiar.
He is the eager Linus, the newbie of the moon base, the Jamestown, that was giving Tracy the grand tour last year when she first got to.
Okay.
So he's like this super eager guy. And it's painful because Danny's putting this guy through something that he's got firsthand knowledge from. Like he says, like, you know, I knew your parents. I loved your parents. And he's just being a shit because he can. And Ed calls him out, but Ed's like way doesn't see the danger here.
Oh, like, yeah. No, I assume the real thing that's going to be a problem here is Danny's going to get angry at Ed at some point, right? And he's got some bombs he's there. To drop.
I think that every time he is in the same room as Ed, it's like the bride when she hears Bill's name. It's just like, and flashing red lights. Because when you look at it and he's like, hey, why don't you take me up on the Spades offer? Like, his teeth are clenched so hard, his molars are going to shatter. He is so furious that Ed is him and he can't be Ed. Oh, uh-huh. God. This, and Ed has no idea about any of this shit laying under the surface.
Yeah. Like I said, bombs to drop, man. At some point, it's going to pop off. And
yeah,
I am waiting to see the fireworks from that for sure.
He's the Russian reactor into the red. But unlike the Russian reactor, I super don't care about it. I hope it goes critical.
I just want to see what Ed's reaction is going to be, because he's been able to tamp down that temper. But Ed's got that streak in him. And like he said,
Ed's an angry guy who's fucked up a lot of shit. Like, you think, I guess the thing is, like, I have a hard time being too hard about the Russians when our astronaut took a cosmonaut hostage for no damn good reason.
Sure.
And almost caused an international incident. Like,
people, yeah, killed yeah. someone. Yeah, it's.
Yeah. And, you know, they also, like, from a Russian cosmonaut perspective, I can see how you would hate this guy, because like that, you forget about the shit that happened in that incident. One of their cosmonauts got burnt alive inside their moon suit.
Horrific.
From a failure to communicate from Americans rolling up on them with M16s on the moon. Like, there's some, like, from a Russian cosmonaut perspective, they would be furious about the way that thing shook out.
Uh-huh.
And probably glad that the whole crater didn't get nuked, but, you know, and two Americans kind of lost their lives, and I think they shot a Marine. But yeah, there's a lot of anger, a lot of anger there.
All right, we go over to the Helium 3 protests that are happening. Gordo's youngest, Jimmy, is there, and he gets recognized by a woman named Sunny, who invites him out for a beer afterward.
Isn't that not Cindy?
I thought it was Cindy. It was Sunny. I don't know.
It's without. I wrote down Cindy, but like without subtitles, tough to know.
Right, I didn't have mine on either. This is how you get deeper into the revolution than you want to be. I've seen Les Mis. I know it's always about like a cute girl. It starts out as like a cute girl invites you to a meeting you didn't know was quite the meeting you were going to.
Yeah, and then you
end up fighting the entire French government.
Can you hear the people singing the song of angry? Yeah, Jimmy is such a fucking fool. Like, a no shit reporter comes up with a recorder and is like, hey, you're this, like, can I talk to you and like give you this giant platform? And what? He's like, fuck off, loser. And then some hippie girl that's like, hey, man, space conspiracy. Am I right? You want to hang out with us? And he's just like, ooh, he's just, yeah. What a goofball.
I mean, what a goofball. I feel like he's looking for some kind of acceptance and, you know, people around him. So I can see why this is appealing to him.
And it's also like, I think this show does a really good job of showing how fair-minded people can get shunted off the wrong intellectual paths. They really do a good job of this next astronaut he bumps into showing,
right,
you know, how this stuff starts.
Ellen arrives at NASA. She gives a congratulatory speech for their achievement, and it kind of stings Margo because she doesn't really view Ellen as one of them anymore, you know. And also, like, when she says, I want to thank you all for your service to your country, Margo knows she's been betraying them behind their backs. So
I think that's the real thing, because the other thing is, like, Margo doesn't know, but like, Ellen's fighting for her life for NASA. Like, she's because like, Margo's got jack shit that is not, you know, explicitly delegated to her through some kind of federal act or law. Mm-hmm. And Ellen is defending with her political capital her whole fucking empire that she's so proud of. And for her to be like, oh, yeah, politicians take all the credit. Ellen was a goddamn astronaut.
Yeah.
She was out there. And she then was an administrator at NASA, and now she's a president protecting NASA. Like, Marco's off the fucking rails. Oh my God.
Yeah, no,
nobody.
Margo is. She doesn't realize that she is a fucking loner, right? And that she can only be a loner because people like Ellen are out there fighting for her organization and her ability to be a loner. Margo has no friends. Margo can't get anything done without the people around her who are fighting for her. And that's how
she
works.
Does have, like, intensely loyal people, because she's repaid that, you know, kind of like she's got a
right. It's not like,
right. It's a cult of personality. She knows how to run it. It is. I don't know. It does seem like a little like despotic fiefdom, the more I see of it. Apple does a great job at these face heel turns. Like, there is an all-time great one in Ted Lasso. Now we've got Margo going to the dark side and For All Mankind. Hats off. Yeah. But boy, it's really
You hate to see Margo. It, because I was so rooting for Margo throughout the last few
seasons. I love Margo. Huge fan of Margo. She just let the power go to her head.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really great speech that Ellen gave, too, about, you know, how, like, you know, everyone thinks NASA's too bureaucratic, too stuck in her ways, can't innovate, can't compete with the private sector. We're fucking proving them all wrong. It shows us what the American people can do when we're all unified behind a common goal. Like, it's good stuff. Good politician speech.
Absolutely. All right, then Jimmy meets with Sonny or Cindy's group. I'm not really sure, which includes a Marine that was on the Jamestown base with his mother. And the Marine and Sonny spout a bunch of conspiracy shit that we know to be false, but it does give Jimmy pause. The astronaut, the Marine was in fact shot in the back.
Yes.
It went down pretty much exactly like the official story.
But there was a backup cooler, but it wasn't hooked up to the main cooler because the Pentagon was doing shady shit that not even Russian. So, like, that's the thing.
Yeah, true.
Like,
there's a shade of truth.
There is shady shit that was being covered up. It's not what everyone thinks it is, but there was, like, the Pentagon did this to themselves by, you know, lying to their own people. This is how this all shit starts. You know,
right?
The government thinking they can do some shady shit behind it, and then everybody starts seeing MK Ultra everywhere. Mm-hmm. But there is the shady shit. It's just everything else that's kind of crazy. And also, like, it's funny because, like, this guy who's saying all this, kind of a shitty Marine, because he was the guy that couldn't hack, like, after months of training, couldn't, like, that's why Tracy had to personally pilot the lunar module, because he could not get the mastery of the controls, and he wasn't picking it up very fast, and maybe he's got a little bit of that, like, thinking that if he was a little bit better, that none of this would have happened, and there's some guilt. Mm-hmm. I just think the show's painting a good portrait of how these movements get started, and, like, all the different agendas and the things that go into fomenting it.
Then over on the Sojourner, Kelly picks up a transmission from Mars 94 claiming that the crew is about to do something very dangerous to try and win the race to Mars. Suddenly the Russian ship begins to accelerate. Helios and NASA notice the move as well as how dangerous it is. And unfortunately, their engines burn out. And this is a problem for multiple reasons. The one that they really go with is the radiation coming off of their failed engines, their damaged engines. And Ed volunteers to go save them, even though it means they won't make it to Mars.
It's first thing I want to open up. Do you think Elaida suspects that Margo's been giving the Russians a little help? Or by the end of this episode, do you think she suspects?
I never got that feeling at all, no.
There's a little strange look that Elaida gives Margo when Margo says, oh my God, if their engines are anything like ours, they could be running them into the overtemp. And then Elaida kind of gives her a strange echo of that look when she uses that same logic later. Like, I'm looking at this temperature, and if this engine is anything like ours, it's going to blow within X amount of minutes. I thought there was a little bit, like, I'm not saying that she's like, you're a fucking Russian spy.
Right.
But I think there was a little bit of a light bulb, at least at 50% brightness, going off of her head. Maybe I'm wrong, but
one of the dots connected.
One of the complications that, like, oh my God, the back half of this fucking season is going to be a rat's nest of shit happening, man. Yeah,
I know, man. I can't wait.
Because these first three episodes are just
being set up.
Set all this stuff up. It's God. Yeah,
that's, the show is so good in that way.
Do you know what Danny and his creepy coworker were talking about as far as disgusting food? They're talking about eating a goat's head, and then he was talking about eating embryonic chicken at just a stage of its development where its bones are crunchiest. And
no,
it was like this random conversation that was interrupted by the signal that the Russians are flooring it. But I'm like, what the? Again, more psycho serial killer shit from Danny. aided and abetted by his equally creepy crew member.
Yeah, I don't know any of the crew members' names. Roland is the only one I really picked up. Will was one of the guys
over on
the Sojourner, right?
I did, yeah. Because like, a lot of these people, I was. The thing is like the people's names I wanted to remember. Like it was Kelly, the guy who got Cable to death, and the gal who got crushed.
Oh, right.
So like, yeah, I don't need to know their names. They're fucking dead. So this guy, the Scottish Highlander, and the gal who was keen to siphon some Russian gas, dead. So
I'm sad that Highlander got destroyed because he was shaping up to be like one of those aliens-esque type figures that's like the oddball crew member that might you know, do something a little crazy.
Yeah.
I could have seen him as that, but he's gone now.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, so Ed volunteers to save them, even though they won't make it to Mars. And then Iessa kicks into gear, asks his people what they think about the plan to help the Russians. They take a vote and decide to let NASA do it so that they can make it to Mars. And that doesn't sit well with Ed. He ignores IS's orders here and continues with the rescue mission. However, when he tries to fire up the engines, he finds that they are locked out of the controls. Man, I was really like on Ed's side here. Good call, Ed. This is the right call for sure. And then all this happens with IS taking control. And I'm like, and then I started to think, okay, this is like, they needed to have Ed on this ship to have anybody to fucking root for on this mission. Otherwise, I just hate all these people, right?
This is true. I don't know.
I think it makes the mission as a whole sympathetic.
Yeah. I'm curious to what extent we'll get to know some of these people. Because, well, I mean, we can talk about our theories about what's going to happen next. But I think some of them, like, I like the salad lady. I like the, I like Nick.
Yeah, some of the crew.
Yeah. But you're no, I
the
get
people,
you.
The like, people I hate are all down on the plant on Earth, right? Like, make calling the shots. Like, the only people I like that are in that mission control room are the people from NASA and Karen,
right? Who are supporting. And I that's the thing is, like, I felt like this was shortchanged because, like, you know, the debate would just really started before he called it to quorum, and I thought Karen's. Karen's counter was weak about like why NASA couldn't do it. And the fact that like he was clearly calling on like the sourpuss that was like shitting on to Ed. This is like I feel like he knows the negative people that pop, like I was talking about in the intro, and he can play these people like an organ to make whatever tune he wants. And then whenever the pitch of the song gets to where his liking, he can just call a quorum and be like, right. Well, there you go, you know. Oh, and then he's a full fucking passive aggressive of being like surprised, like, well, that's how, well, then that just settles it.
Yeah.
Am I crazy? Go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you. Sorry.
I was going to say, he can also couch it in just like, well, I'm letting everyone air their opinions, right? Like, I see the body language over there. They clearly don't agree. Let's give them a say.
Right. But we've got 3 days to work with. Why do we have to have this snap decision in 30 seconds? It's because of what Dev wanted Ed. Because of the prestige and because of the boost it would give to his thing, he wants to be the first on. Like, he is, it seems transparently manipulating. Because I felt like he closed the Ed quorum a little too soon on the sourpuss side of things. And now he's playing up the sourpuss side. So, against the people that have the real world experience. I mean, it's shitty. Like, yeah, this is a law of the sea kind of thing. You know, when you're in situations that are life and death and brutal environments, you just developed this culture of damn what your plans were this afternoon. Someone is dead in the water and they might die if you turn your back on them. And that goes and triple in space.
And I feel like the arguments they make aren't like showstoppers against this. You know, like NASA can take on this crew.
It's a debate. It's debatable. Death, and maybe they have more experience and they aren't driving a grand piano. But on the other hand, there's not the space.
But there's far less comfort, right? There's not going to be any room for these people. Also, they don't bring up the fact that they have a Russian defector on board and that might cause conflict.
Right.
That's a serious issue. So
Yeah,
they don't fully air the arguments.
It seems the real solution should have been they both fall back and they use Sojourner to like ferry. Because like what Danielle said about that thing, like being like a grand. Can you imagine this disaster happened and Phoenix was docked up next to it? Like how much bigger a disaster it would
the
be?
Cables, the number of cables on Phoenix alone.
It's multiplied by infinity. It's like it's like cable. You divide cables by cables.
Other cables? That's a disaster. Yeah, made in heaven, man.
It might destroy Mars. the combined tangle that happens there. Sure. But it feels like the natural solution would be to use Sojourner as a lifeboat to move the astronauts from the large, unwieldy Russian transport to the large, unwieldy private transport. And then everyone could, like, then it seems like if you want to make a decision for the comedy of all humankind, you just go forward and all three of you just claim a joint victory.
I mean, that's an impossibility, right?
No, and NASA gets the moral high ground because everyone knows that they would have won if none of this had happened. How is it impossible, though?
Because you've got guys with big egos like ISA wanting to make history here.
Yeah, he would still make history. He would be the first on Mars. It would be his ship.
He would be
getting there
with the Russians and the American governments.
Does Dev think that he can plant a flag on Mars and then tell the United States and the Russians to fuck off? Like, hey, this is a free environment. Like, that's the thing is, like, I feel like he thinks if he gets there first that he can run, like, this completely untouchable colony that the nations of the Earth cannot regulate. Like, that seems fantasy.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk Podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
I, Yeah, because I mean, he's still going to be somewhat dependent on Earth, right? He's not going to set up a truly autonomous colony that can compete with any kind of arsenal they could send from Earth.
That's what I was saying. He can't fight against any joint Russian, American, Chinese, no. North Korean assault fleet that, yeah, like he would be dead in the water. So,
right. So he needs their support, weird. Or at least they're keeping them at an arm's length. He can't have them up their ass, but I don't know.
It feels like one of those guys that's like one of those rich guys that's like, you know what? I'm going to buy a fucking oil derrick and I'm going to take it out in international waters and I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want. It's like, you might be able to do that and you might get away with it. But the second a sovereign nation decides they don't like whatever you're doing out in international waters, guess what?
Yeah.
You're going to get fucked by some sort of, you know, destroyer, cruiser, aircraft, carrier combination. You know,
right? I mean, he has to have their support until he develops what, space superiority.
So until he can defend the sovereignty of Mars, until they invent the Epstein drive and come up with fucking Derringer class battleships or whatever to protect it, rail cannons and such. Yeah, he's for a long fucking time.
Yeah, it's like hundreds of years is the kind of time span we're talking. But like,
yeah.
So I don't know what his. I mean, I think he does want glory, right? He does want prestige. But yeah, what is his other plan? That was the thing that never jived with me with what he was saying about like, oh, the Americans and Russians are going to get there and fight over the moon, but I'm going to get there first and it's going to be some kind of crazy utopia. Because
you can set a tone. Why? I guess you can. You get a little moral high ground from like the publicity of getting there first. Cause I want to talk about the way the news coverage covered, like there's a tone when the lady was talking about Sojourner or Phoenix is continuing on Sojourner's act. Cause I got it kind of like, this is bullshit. It's the way you would like a reporter would cover a World Series that got stolen because somebody was shaving points on a bet. Like this is illegitimate. Call, right? Yeah. This is an illegitimate result, but it is the result. And I don't know, like I don't think Dev foresees like what a black eye this is going to be because he's got to rely on the goodwill of the nations of the world to set up whatever he wants to set up there. Just bottom line.
Yeah. And he's long-term. Already kind of at the heart of the energy debates going on on Earth too. I mean, he runs a lot of the industry that is mining helium-3, which is putting these people out of business. So
you are 100% right.
Yeah. He's already got a hole to dig out of. Margot suggests Ellen nationalize IS's company to force him to continue the rescue operation for the Russians. Ellen thinks Margot is insane. She's being the selfish one here and tells her so.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Danielle and Ellen agree with that, I guess. And they continue the rescue mission themselves and spring into action here.
And let's be clear, just in case people have a problem with that analysis, like if it was just Phoenix and Mars 94 up there, I might be sympathetic to NASA commandeering by force a private but registered in the U.S. corporation spacecraft to do an international humanitarian mission. Okay.
Sure.
But NASA's got a ship up there and they can fucking turn around and do it. It is kind of their job. It'd be like, if there's a Coast Guard ship and a private yacht trying to sail around the world for the first time and there's a disaster, push come to shove, it's the Coast Guard that's got to go out and do it. You know, like maybe bad show for the yachtsman for not, but
yeah.
Margo's insane here.
There's some consequences, some goodwill consequences from this, but we'll see.
Yeah. The political fallout from her stealing the Phoenix would be insane.
And we get a shot of Roland here being very worried about being a defector among Russian cosmonauts with good reason, as we'll see at the end of this episode.
Yeah. I also thought that everything was handled just right. Like the Sojourner crew reacting to having her mission scrubbed, like they were really bum and glum about it. But, you know, Danielle tells them what's what, like, hey, we won the right to be first on Mars. No one can take that from us, but we got to do what's right. And then, you know, kind of joking that like, oh, maybe the Russians give us a plaque was kind of like the crew turning the corner on because their hopes and dreams. Right.
Yeah, and this harkens back to what Ed had to do on his Apollo mission, right? Like, make the choice not to land on the moon and be the first person on the moon when he could have been.
Yeah, yeah.
And he knows he could have been, right? He could have got that done. He just played it safe. So, yeah, Daniel's doing the same here, making a sacrifice for what she knows is the right call.
And then you know what Sojourner does, Jim?
What does Sojourner do?
A flip and burn.
Oh, I suppose so. They flip their solar cells.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I said Behringer. It's Doniger. I don't want a bunch of angry Expanse nerds emailing me. It's Doniger class is a joke I was trying to go for in a segment ago.
Gotcha.
Please don't be mad. I'm pretty sure 99% of our... I was going to say, for the 99% of our For All Man audience is probably the Expanse audience. So I get that straight.
I mean, it's too late, though. They heard you say Behringer. They paused the podcast, and they immediately
ranted off. That's your mistake. You leave the podcast playing, and if we say before, we correct our mistake before you get the email sent, you gotta unsend it.
I mean, they're also nerds, so they're fast typers. So I'm sure they could have.
I'm dealing with some 200 word per minute sons of bitches out there.
Yep. There are people, man. they're gonna give you hell.
They are people. They are.
there are people. Not they are people. All right. The news talks about the rescue operation. Danielle approaches the Russian ship very cautiously and notes that their ship might actually use the same fuel as the Russian ship, possibly allowing them to reach Mars after all. And they rescue the Russians, who end up hating Roland. Let's talk about.
I wonder how that would go down. Disaster. I wonder how that would go down. What does Russia say about the United States holding their citizens just because they were going to go on through the mission? I wonder if Russia could bitch and moan so much that NASA's forced to turn around and go home, or if NASA could be like, look, we rescued your people. We're on the way to do a mission. They'll get home when we get home. Fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that should be the result. If I were the NASA administrator, I would say, fuck you. We're going
to
do this.
That's maximum embarrassment for the Russians, though, that you will be amongst the first to land on Mars, but only because the United States sent a taxi to pick you up.
Also, I mean, there's concerns about like how much, you know, stuff they have waiting for them on Mars. Are there enough rations for them to get by with extra Russian cosmonauts they didn't expect to have, you know?
Right.
I mean, there won't be a refuel resupply mission coming for quite a while, a couple years, I think. So do they have the supplies for it, or do they have to go home? I don't know. Fuel isn't the only concern.
Okay. Is there a possibility? Because there's a whole piracy foreshadowing thing throughout this whole episode. Is there a possibility that the Russians engineered this deliberately to take over Sojourner?
God, I mean, it just seems too complex. So many things have to go just
because if NASA doesn't get the idea of stealing their fuel, then almost all their astronauts are inside the ship. Because I'm thinking, like, the way it happened is they had as many astronauts on the outside as inside, and there's as many cosmonauts inside as there are Americans. And the way the captain said, no one leave the ship until I give the express order, made it seem like he was going to... And maybe it's not like they intended to take over the ship. Maybe they intended to scuttle it to keep the Americans from stealing the fuel.
Mm.
Yeah. And it got out of hand, but yeah, I don't know. I just wonder what do you think the plausibility out of a scale of 1 to 100%?
It's probably like a 2%. I mean, like I said, the things you have to orchestrate here for this to go exactly right. I mean, I guess it would be also a victory to take the Phoenix. Because, like, what if ISA doesn't do the shit he does, right? And
That's a good point. Like, they don't know which is going to come. They could probably, maybe they assume they could take over either. Shit tier theory that the Russians are going to steal a ship. I hear loud and clear. 2% plausible.
Yeah, not a
fan. What about the scuttle the ship to keep the Americans from stealing their fuel and being able to complete their mission?
I think is much more plausible. That seems like a very spiteful, shitty Russian thing to do.
And maybe they fucked up which engine it should be, and they didn't intend it to crush or kill anybody, but they wanted to disable the ship and not give the NASA the ability to siphon their fuel.
Yeah. I mean, it's I don't know. I do think like it was they portray it the way I think the Russians were hoping it would play out, that they could fire off their engines, they would survive this, you know, running them at 140% or whatever for 7 minutes, and they would get to Mars first. I think that's what the Russians actually did want.
But yeah, I think that's the primary theory. It's more of like when that failed. Like,
yeah, when that fails, scuttling the ship makes
a lot of sense. Was there a plan B? Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. Is that a 50% theory or is that like 4%? Like what's
sure,
where
I'll
we
give it 52.
Ooh.
I think it's more likely than not. Those Russians, man, they don't want their
I just met the burden of preponderance of proof. All right.
Yeah. So the core let's of talk gym. About it. actually, I want to talk about them doing the crossing here, right? The boarding of the ship is on these tethers, hand over hand. I mean, what a way to cross a gap in space. I know they're tethered to the tether,
right?
But this feels very risky.
Terrifying. I always think about doing like a naked spacewalk. Uh-huh. And like no one has ever done it in the deep of space. But like imagine this where like, yeah, you can't like see the Earth as a reference frame. You're just out there in a void, like you said, hand over hand. And I know you're clipped to it, but holy hell.
Right?
Like I couldn't climb one of those like 1,000-meter towers where the guys are like, you know, yeah. changing a red light bulb at the top. And I know they're clipped in too. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I can't even imagine. It's it seems like literally something that would drive you insane.
Is there a point where you get so high off of the Earth that it's not a fear of heights anymore? It's what? A fear of open spaces?
Yeah, but it's got to be kind of like if you were doing an ocean crossing, you got in the middle of the Atlantic and you're in a doldrums and they're like, hey, you know what? Jump in. Not but no. 5,000 feet of water underneath you. No. Right? It's just kind of like
you jump in.
The void. Yeah, like I don't know what's out there. It could be like fucking aliens, you know? Yeah, no, it's not rational. It's that it's that like I'm afraid Jaws is going to eat me kind of nebulous fear.
So the engine damage threatens to destroy the Russian ship and the Sojourner along with it, and Margo can't warn them due to the communications delay, which is upwards of 5 minutes at this point. Their fuel tank ruptures on the Russian ship, causing the ships to collide, killing several members of the Russian and American crews. It's second only to crossing hand over hand on a tether. This is the worst possible fear. This is horrific. Having hundreds of tons of metal steamroll you against hundreds of tons of other metal.
Because that's the thing. People are like, well, it's zero gravity, so why can't she just resist, but like it's the inertia. She has got several hundred tons coming at her against several hundred tons. Her body cannot sustain. She's not a fucking steel strut. And
what she gonna do, I love the shot of the clip. The shot of the clip is so perfect because she could detether herself.
Right.
But then what? Then you're just floating free in space. I almost think
that's the plan. Oh, for sure. And I think she would have, but like it's ironic because that carabiner is so obviously designed to resist being detached unless you're, and she's trying to now take this thing because like that's the worst thing could happen, coming unclipped from the ship. Now it's the only thing that will save her life, and he's got these, I don't know if you know this about the NASA suits, but like they're pressured to like, you know, 15 PSI, like atmospheres, and that makes like those fingers are like a sausage that's fully inflated, and like grip things, it takes strength, like you're using one of those hand exercise machines to resist the internal pressure of the suit. And she's trying to do that with like seconds to spare, you know, and
it's pulling her into, so there's like a tension on that might not let her get free unless she pulls herself even faster,
which is
everything
your instinct says not to do.
And then how do you stop that inertia, which is okay, you're detethered, but now you're going toward the machine, the steamroller. Like,
and you can't.
And
your
feet maybe aren't connected to the ground anymore. It
was
an
horrific
situation. Terrifying. Yeah,
I think the guy burning to death in his moon suit is still the worst thing I've ever seen. But her just being crushed and her like, oh my god,
they have invented so many horrible ways to die in space in this show, and I love every second of it.
And then also they need to start making these faceplates out of Gorilla Glass or some shit, because that Russian cosmonaut got dashed against and they made a point of his face shield popping and exploding. And then I assume our intrepid Scotsman with another one of these goddamn runaway space cables.
Mm-hmm.
The menaces of deep space takes one to his face shield. I expect he's going to die too.
Oh, yeah. He's got to. He's not getting back inside.
Are you afraid for Baranov? For you're calling him by his first name, I forget, but Roland. I wrote Baranov. Roland. Yeah. Roland Baranov. Because he's stuck in an airlift with, or an airlock with, three angry Russians that just have to grab his face shield and open it, and he's dead.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's
and I don't think you can resist that. I don't think, like, if maybe it's one on one you could, but if I don't think you could keep I don't think there's anything on the outside that keeps that thing from popping open if someone gets a hold of it and does it.
I think the more dramatic thing is to have them in that sardine can for a while and let it fester for a bit. So I don't think they're going to just pop his face shield, but I do think, like, yeah, this is a big problem for him.
And they all know him. Like, he recognized, yeah. They're all asking. They were all in the same space force 10 years ago. And he's like, uh-huh. You know, welcome. And he's like, Dimitri, and you dog of defector. And the hatred they're looking at this guy, their eyes. Oh, man.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's huge damage to both ships now, right? This is no longer an issue of, hey, we got the fuel or we don't have the fuel to get to Mars. This is like NASA's ship is crippled. Is the Phoenix going to come rescue them?
I think they have to. So they're going to get by circumstance the decision I thought was the best one, which is all a joint mission.
Right. And you've got this big hotel, this floating hotel. So you have room for everybody, right? You've got hydroponics set up. You've got all this, these supplies waiting for you on Mars. I think there's going to be enough to pull it off. But yes, they're going to have to come across this finish line, nose to nose to nose, everybody in a tie.
There's a lot more personnel on the Helios side. If push comes to shove, they have like, 24 to, I think there's three Americans left, maybe four. And I think they said there was six cosmonauts. One of them died.
I think like two or three made it over.
Oh, because you're right. Well, the ship hasn't exploded exactly yet. Like it's went critical.
But it's thrusting out off its trajectory, and like it's gonna be hard to get to both of those ships, I think.
Yeah, I agree. But they are surely going to do it. There's no fucking way the devs like, pound sand. We're just going to go on to that. Ed would dismantle the ship before he lets that happen.
I mean, he would dismantle the ship before he didn't go help.
That's what I'm saying.
The Sojourner, but as far
he would tear
other,
that thing apart bolt by bolt before he lets them leave them behind. Yeah,
and I'm honestly surprised as soon as he realized he was locked out, he didn't give the order to start dismantling consoles and like get to the heart of this ship and give me manual control, right?
Yeah. It wouldn't be out of his. It's going to be really interesting to see what his relationship to ground control is. And also, like, because Karen and Bill are kind of like this potentially rogue element within Helios, because they're not, you know, they're not part of that culture, really.
No, and they both have immense respect and or love for Ed being up there. You know, they don't want his control.
Plus, a lot of the crew they established of the Phoenix is NASA trained. So you're going to have, you got to think that push comes to shove, a lot of those people have sympathies for their NASA counterparts and maybe loyalties. There might be a mutiny.
All complicated by the fact that Danny is here ready to drop those bombs. Because with Karen being his lifeline to Earth, this is going to get real complicated real fast.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a shit show, man. Oh my God.
I don't know how this plays out, but I'm super excited to see it.
I'm not excited to see all that, but everything else the lone psycho that needs to just get his face plant. Needs to have an especially brittle face plate is what he needs.
Yeah, yeah. And strong and fast whipping cable.
Just a whipping cable. There's got, you know, seems like space is full of them. There's one with you already dodged the cable once, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
Like to see it do it twice.
The cable,
oh my God.
Comes for all of us eventually.
Indeed. The end of the episode comes for us right now. Is there anything else we want to talk about?
No, I'm ready to call it quits until next time.
FAM at baldmove.com. Fam, join the Hi Bob fam at fam@baldmove.com to send in your feedback. We will have another probably monster mega marathon mailbag before you know it. Curious to see what you guys are thinking about the menace that is Cables. Cables are like capes on superhero costumes. You gotta get rid of them. Yeah. All cables and hoses have to be eliminated because
rigid
they're just
bodies only. That's all I want to see on my ships.
You know, NASA tried to use 100% oxygen. It made a lot of sense. Didn't have to have as high pressure, but it burnt astronauts alive. You know, you might want cables. Can't have them. Nope. Just fucking kills astronauts left and right. All designs have to use no cables from here on forward. So that's where we're at. For FAM at baldmove.com. If you want to make a pro cable, if you want to make a bold pro cable statement, until the next episode, we'll be there for you. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.